Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. I have Angela Richardson with me today. Now, Angela is a master's qualified leadership and people performance expert with over 25 years experience in advertising, mentoring, coaching leaders in HR, governance, and change management. Angela is experienced in manufacturing, transportation, government, non-private sectors in Australia and the US. So there's a ton of experience there that we're going to actually draw on this morning. As the founder of Eucalypt Consulting, Angela's mission has been guiding organizations through the people side of workplace transformation and growth. Eucalypt Consulting has delivered programs, projects, and advisory for Griffith University, Queensland Health, Kestrel Coal, Hastings Dairying, Lindsay Transport, Wesley Mission, Queensland, and so many more. There's a knowledge base there, Angela, which I can't wait to tap into. She is a board chair on Private Independence School, and Angela is a member of the Australian Institute of Human Resources, a member of the Australian Institute of Company Directors, and AHRI HR Technology. It's obviously something.
It's okay.
And analytics forum coordinator. Angela lives in Charlotte Park in Logan and works across Brisbane, Gold Coast and Logan City. She was raised in Brisbane, lived in Washington, D.C. for 5 years and returned to Logan to work to raise her two boys with her husband, Paris. So welcome, Angela. I am looking forward to our conversation because I've had sort of 170 plus interviews, but I haven't had anyone that's been really focusing on that HR space. And with that experience that you have, diverse right across from, you know, major organizations into small business consulting as well. So,
Yeah, great to be here. And thanks for the lovely introduction.
How'd you get into it? That's probably the first question.
Way back when I was trying to pick a career, I realized that I started with a passion and love for psychology. And when I started at university, realized I didn't want to go down the clinical path, but I really loved the whole concept of organizational psychology. So how do people work at work? Like how do we get the best out of people? How do we create great workplaces and teams where people do their best, can be their best. And I ended up, I kept on studying and did a master's in that. And then I met a guy and we got married and I went overseas for a little while. And when you're doing organizational psychology, probably one of the key areas to get experience in is human resources, because there's some linkages there to human resources functions. So it was a great entree into the workplace and how, you know, I was just out of university, so I didn't really know too much, but how organizations work and the people side of that, really. So I spent the majority of my career in human resources, but probably towards the latter of my career, I moved more into what they call organizational development, which is, you know, leadership development, change management, capability development. So all of those, succession planning, talent management. So all of the kind of proactive things that you can do in organizations that relate to people. And then I got the opportunity of redundancy 3.5 years ago, and I could have easily sort of gone back into that corporate world, but decided to do my own thing and give it a go. And I haven't looked back.
Well done, you. Yeah. That's a big step, especially, and that's what I found when I was in the GM role. It's a big step into your own business because you're getting paid well, and the redundancy helps, doesn't it? When you go,
it does.
This is the universe going, here you go. Here's a startup.
Back yourself a little bit. You've got a little bit of cushioning, I guess. But it's been good. It's been a huge learning curve, obviously. It's very different, as you talk about in your podcast all the time. The difference between, you know, a corporate environment and running your own business is huge. But I was excited by the challenge, actually, to learn something new, because I felt, not that I know everything about human resources and change management, but I felt I'd, you know, hit a bit of a peak around that, and this was just something totally new to sink my teeth in.
And stepping into your own business, it does give you the freedom to, especially you've got a couple of children, Angela, you said.
Yeah.
How old?
I've got a 19-year-old and an 11-year-old.
Okay, so you've still got one that's around.
Yeah, another 5 years, but who's counting? But that whole juggling,
And at least with your own business, you can, this is what I have absolutely loved about it, is I can put things in my diary. I just schedule time out of my diary because it's my time. And then when someone wants to book something, I'll go, no, that's my time.
Yeah.
It's a very different experience than when you have a job. It's.
Yeah, that independence is certainly a huge bonus, like you dictating your work. I mean, you're responsible for everything too, which is sometimes scary.
The other side of it. Which hat am I wearing at this particular time?
But definitely having that, it's a sense of freedom and independence that you don't get in corporate organizations. That's great in that. And the variety of work I've really enjoyed, you know, you listed off, you know, some of those organizations, and it's just great working for different organizations. There's a lot of similarities, but there are differences as well. So really tailoring solutions is interesting to me, because as each organization I go into, it's like a new puzzle to solve sort of thing, which keeps me on my toes and excited, you know.
Interestingly, I was chatting to a gentleman this morning that has his own HR business, but he does a recruitment business, HR, recruitment business, but he treats it more as a HR space, because it's not just finding anyone for a job, it's finding the right person for the job, but what's the business going to do with that person afterwards, which is such an important factor, isn't it?
It is. It's strategic, you know, selecting the right person, understanding what, you know, first step is always trying to understand what's the gap and who do you need to fill that gap. And that could be done in so many different ways, not just recruiting a full-time person, you know, in a certain field. So it's one of the big tips. You know, I'm not a recruiter, but I always sort of say, when a leader gets to the point where they need to recruit, don't just dive into doing what you've always done. Take a little bit of a pause and say, well, actually, what do I need? What have I got? What do I need? Not just like tomorrow, but in 5 years, 10 years, a little bit longer term thinking, what are the skills that I need to develop and who might be the best person to bring that in? It could be, you know, some whiz bang AI specialist just straight out of uni, or it could be, you know, someone that's, you know, totally different to what they originally envisaged, just by doing that little bit of a pause and a think.
And that's such an important factor. And that was the example, you know, when we were chatting, I said, what, you might employ a forklift driver, but that forklift driver might want to be the warehouse manager in 5 years. And how do you know? Well, they might not. And it just depends on.
Yep. And that goes to your succession planning as well, and being really keyed into what do your people want? You know, people, I guess, you know, there's a lot of movement in the employment sector, and, you know, people are probably more than ever kind of picking and choosing where they want to work. So it's really important to be keyed into that, you know, understanding the drivers of, you know, people engaging in organizations and staying in organizations. A lot of it comes down to, you know, leadership. It comes down to the development, the type of development that you provide. But equally, there are some people that are just happy to do what they're doing and do the same thing for the next 10 years. So, you know, if that suits your business, you know, it's good to have that sort of loyalty. If it doesn't suit, then, you know, that's a challenge.
Definitely. The and, you know, along those lines too is what this gentleman was saying this morning is that what it was a 2 years ago, the fourth most important factor was income, was how mm-hmm. much you got paid. Yep. Now, yep. The first most important aspect is how much you get paid.
Yeah.
Which has switched around as opposed
it has.
To,
yeah. Yeah. For many, many years, I used to sort of talk about with leaders, I used to say, look, you know, as long as people get paid fairly, they don't really, anything in addition to that is not really going to get you bang for buck, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, focusing on the other things for people was important, leadership, the team environment, the development opportunities. But you're right, it has, you know, it has changed in recent times. And not surprisingly, really, you know, people are really suffering, you know, that the cost of living pressure.
And that's interesting, isn't it? So people, and when you're looking at the psychology of the workplace, tell me what that means, first of all. What does that mean? The psychology of a workplace.
Psychology of a workplace. Well,
a workplace psychology.
It's applying a science to the people side of work, which is, you know, what are the things that, what do we know? What is, and there's a whole, I guess, research body around it. There's a lot of different theories and models and things, but really it comes down to, you know, how and why people do the things they do at work, and how can you create a work environment that brings the best out of teams. So let's take it to a bit more of a practical level. If you describe, you know, the difference between the best place you've worked and the worst place you've worked, what is it about those workplaces that makes the difference between those two? And you might say, well, in the workplace that, you know, I had the best experience, I had a really great leader, and they trusted me to do my job. They gave me autonomy, but they were there to support me. If I made a mistake, you know, it wasn't the end of the world, and they were there to kind of lift me up and support me through. You know, and on the side, you know, the side of it was a worst workplace, it might be, you know, really bad behaviors going on in the workplace, you know, stress, not feeling safe. What else? You know, think of all those.
Oh, look, I'm getting that. I know when I was. So for me, just as that, it's triggering things for me to think of. For me, the best and worst place is the same place.
Yeah, okay.
Change of management.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So the owner was very, very hands-on, well, the first 15 years I was there, and then stepped back, brought in an ops manager, some took over, and particularly with the ops manager, there was no respect. There was, it was a completely different experience. And I, as people have listened before, that was sort of when I stepped into a five-day fortnight. I was doing that anyway, but it was the catalyst to go, hey, Janine, just go do your own stuff. You've got it going anyway.
Yeah.
It was a prompt, and yeah, probably it was the, you know, I keep saying thank you to the universe that brought her into that position. Otherwise, I still would be, you know, earning my 100 grand a year for 5 days a fortnight. Enjoying that, but not enjoying it, and having created what I've created and worked with the amazing people and had the flexibility and all the things that have been positives with it. But it was the best and the worst place was the same place.
Yeah. And it can be, you know, you can go into an organization and, you know, feel a real sense of alignment to the purpose, the people, And those things can change. And that's the whole, I guess, point is that what creates that environment where people feel connected, they're motivated, they're engaged, you know, they give that discretionary effort. You know, you want an organization full of those people. So how do you create that? And yes, leadership is absolutely key. And, you know, there's a lot of work that I do in the space of coaching, guiding, advising leaders in that space, because it's not, you know, you're not born a good leader. You might have some good, you know, role models as you're growing up, and you might have a good sense of what it all means. But for many people, it's like when I stepped out of corporate, you know, from corporate to running my own business, that's a whole different skill set. Mm-hmm. It's not the same skill set that I learned being the technical expert engineer or sales manager or whatever. It's a totally different skill set. And there's an assumption that it's easy to kind of pick up, but it's not. And particularly, I think it's becoming increasingly challenging.
One of the things, you know, we're talking psychology. One of my favorite topics is like personality profiling, understanding people and why they make decisions that they do. That's such an important aspect, isn't it?
Yeah, it comes down to understanding each other, because we know that diversity is great for organizations, but what it brings diversity, which means we actually need to like stop and you know, get to know each other better. And and those you know, there's lots and lots of different, you know, personality, and some are sort of a little more credible than others, but at the end of the day, if you could use, you know, lots of different tools to just start that conversation about, you know, this is the way I like to work, this is the way I like to communicate, this is, you know, these are my strengths in terms of skills and abilities, or these are the things that I'm passionate about inside and outside work, you know, not just sharing a little bit of yourself, but also getting to know your colleagues on that personal level is really helpful when you're needing to rely and work with each other to get things done.
Absolutely. In one of the personality profiling, I'm quite choleric, which is, for those that aren't aware, it's make decisions quickly. An idea comes in and all of a sudden it's processed and out the other side type of. And also I'm fairly sanguine too, so that's, you know, hence the colors and the let's have some really good fun with it. But if I'm under stress, I just jump back in choleric and just get the job done. Don't annoy me. And I think a word that some people have used more than once could be quite bossy as well. So,
but action orientated,
and that's what it is.
Yeah.
But it is that, you know, especially when people are under stress. It's one thing to go, okay, I can play nicely now. And look, as a coach, I play nicely in all of the, you know, different what's needed at the time with that particular client, and adapt to it. Still coming from the let's get the job done space, but you adapt. But when you're under stress, that becomes a real. And a lot of businesses are under financial stress now. There's a you know, they're limiting the amount of workers to get the job done. There's so much. That's really tricky, isn't it?
It is very tricky.
You help people with, and how do you do that?
Well, I think, you know, that one of the traps is that, you know, thinking that you can do it all on your own, and I think. Also, I see a lot with leaders recruiting people in their team that are just like them. So we talked about the, you know, the diversity and the value of that. So you yourself, and that's great. You understand yourself better by doing, you know, those surveys and things. But also understanding, like, how can you bring in people that are going to complement your skills and abilities and strengths? Because not everyone is good in a crisis, you know, but you do need those people. You need that sort of steady hand when you're not in a crisis to, to actually people motivated to rinse and repeat, you know, repeat the work that needs to get done and be engaged by that. There's a lot of people that are not, you know, motivated by routine. So I think it is challenging.
Just start honing on that, Angela. Is a lot of people that aren't motivated by routine, but there are people who are motivated.
Absolutely. And understanding, again, going back to, you know, what I said before, really understanding what do you need, and you don't need another one of yourself. You know, you need.
My husband keeps saying that, like, you know.
Even though, yeah, I
thank
do.
Goodness, we don't have two. Although he'd get a lot more things done.
That's right. Yeah. You wouldn't be playing. You know, there's a saying out there around, you know, your biggest strength can be your biggest weakness, right? So, you know, your strength can become an impediment to you, depending on, you know, overused strengths. You know, you're really good at something and you keep, and I've seen it many, many times in organizations. So you've got to know what your strengths are, yes, and you've got to bring other people in that complement your strengths. And that sort of, you know, you'll each have different strengths and weaknesses depending on where the organization's at. So again, it's really important to understand what you need, you know, what do you actually need when you're recruiting for a role, and learning to let go, even though it is hard for businesses under, you know, financial pressure to want to invest in people, but it's actually the time you need to do that. It's the time, you know, whilst you're in crisis mode, who's doing the strategic planning for your business? Who's setting, you know, the next quarterly goals, 6 month, 12 month, if you're doing everything?
It's knowing how to delegate well. That, yeah, it's something. It's really interesting. In some places of my life, I'm very, very good at delegating, and there are more in places where it's more volunteer roles and I'm mentoring, enabling people to do different roles. But I find for me, as I said, I've got much better in the last 10, 15 years, but I'll look, just get the job done. It's not that I thought I could do the job better. I'm not a perfectionist.
Yeah.
I want to discuss perfectionist behaviors with you as well. Yeah. But it's more like, look, it'll take me 5 minutes. It's going to take you 6 hours. Let's just do it. It's an interesting concept, isn't it? And it's not, and that's just my personality. Yeah. Whereas, you know, other people might need that whole creative flair to be around them to get something done, or others might perform better if they're in a group to do it. And others, give me solitary confinement and I'll go through the steps.
Smash it out. I have the same challenge as well, is, you know, when you're building, you've got a team and you're building their skills, like, you know, it's painful to watch people struggle. And I think it's a part of my helping side. Like, I really just want to help, but, you know, I'm not helping them by doing it for them. I've got to remember that, remind myself of that, because they need to learn. The only way they're going to learn is by doing. So you can coach them, you can, you know, provide the feedback, you can sort of help them explore, but, you know, they're not going to learn unless they're doing. So the more you do for them, the less they're going to learn. But it is hard, you know, you know that you could do something, you know, in half the time, and but got to let go.
Absolutely. And that's really hard for perfectionists, isn't it?
And I've struggled with that, and I've many years coached a lot of, in particular women, around perfectionism. I've gone on a journey. Like, I'm not, you know, right down the end of the scale anymore, but I've you know, worked on myself enough to kind of get to the point where it's not a focus as much. But you know, you get into old habits, and I think it's when you're under pressure, you do get into that kind of really almost like black and white thinking, and it has to be a certain way. So stopping and reflecting on that, stopping and reflecting on what am I trying to achieve? What's the bigger goal here? What's the outcome that I want? Because the outcome's not going to change whether, that font is exactly the same or, the lines are straight or whatever. Reminding yourself of that, what are you actually trying to achieve? What's the bigger picture here? Because you're not going to be achieving it or achieving it in an efficient way, which, when you're running your own business, you don't have, hours and hours and hours of time, unless you're happy to be working for free, to spend on perfecting things.
No, so for yourself as a recovering perfectionist,
Yes.
how do you what tools or techniques did you use to not, because I know perfectionists, and it's so hard to
It is
let go.
hard.
It is really hard to.
And there's an impact. There's a psychological and physical impact, in fact, and studies have shown it. So it's not healthy. It's not healthy for you. And on top of that, you're not actually achieving what you set out to achieve anyway. And I guess thirdly, if you lead a team, you're causing stress and angst unnecessarily for your team as well. What do I do? It's like that song, "Let It Go, Let It Go." You do
One of
have
those
to let it
mantras,
go.
I
I
can let
think
things go.
what I said before, which is to start with the end in mind. So before I start a piece of work, really be clear in my own mind and with the client or whoever I'm working with, what are we trying to achieve here? And focusing on what does good look like and making sure, because what good looks like to me is not necessarily what good looks like to whoever I'm helping. So
That's the thing with what is perfect.
yeah, exactly. And I've got so for certain things like PowerPoint skills, for example, I've got this idea in my head of what something should look like. Now, my client or the person I'm working with doesn't have any of that, or has a totally different view. So understanding, what looks good to them and working to that versus my own standards is really important, because anything in addition to what is success to them is wasting my time. That sounds a bit harsh, doesn't it? But
Oh no, you're absolutely correct, and that's something. Oh, I could do a whole conversation about how much time people waste by giving away too much time to clients, or too much spending hours and hours planning for 1 hour of training, or how.
And not adding any value with that
No.
additional work, because it's over, and this is it's related to perfectionism. It's over engineering, and I do have a tendency to do that sometimes too. I think the other key trick is to have people around you that can pull you up when they can see you doing that. And I do have a little group of people that I work with regularly, and they know me, and we have that kind of relationship where they can say, "Ange, I think you're over engineering this," and then usually they're right. Take a step back.
People don't say that to me. But I'm, yeah, and I think that part of it, I do believe, is confidence in your capacity and ability to do what you're saying you're going to do. You find that, that so if I'm doing any speaking anywhere, of course, I'm going to prepare what the outcome is for the audience and what people, why I've been hired to do that. But it's now because I know, okay, I can just do it, and whatever I'm training on is it's stuff that I know and can deliver well. So I have to overthink it, or I just, and it's not winging it. It's just, so I think that would have to help. I don't know, because it's not.
Yeah, there's definitely a link there to confidence. I've learnt to wing it a lot more. Yeah. Trust yourself that you've got the skills and you can do it. Again, that's something that a lot of women struggle with, is that confidence. I've always been confident in things that I've done at least once before, but it's things that I do new that really, turn me inside out. Mm. I had to speak for the school that I work for as a board member. I had to speak at the year 12 graduation last year. And I was like, turning myself inside out, worrying about that event and, how I was going to look and what I was going to say. And it was nerve-wracking, but to sort of counteract that, I got someone who is an expert at public speaking, and I had her coach me for a few times, and we worked out some sort of fallacies and mindset issues I had with the whole scenario, and it worked out really well in the end. And now I've got to do that again this year, but I haven't been worrying about it all this year. Yeah, it's that first time that always gets me.
And mentioning that fallacies in your head.
Yeah, yeah.
That's that imposter syndrome. That it's actually not a syndrome. I spoke to somebody and it's not a syndrome, but it gets called that now.
Yeah.
It became popular terminology for it. But it is that.
Yep.
That I'm not good enough to achieve this or do this.
Or in my mind, who's this woman who's not got an education background coming, as a board leader for a school, and, who does she think she is? Like, she doesn't have any background or experience in this, how is she adding value? So all that sort of mindset and self criticism all comes to the fore when you're feeling stressed about things.
Mm.
So, doing that work to reframe all of that is really important. One of the most important things that I learned out of that was to be yourself, to be genuine, and to not try and be someone else that you think that people are looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably the best advice you could give anyone, is there's only one of you.
Yeah.
And be that authentic you in what you do, because that's who and what people can connect with.
Yes, that's right. And I think I was able to do that, which is good, because the end of the day, I do add value, and there's lots that I bring that is different, to that board. So it's just about shining that through. Letting people know that.
Yes, definitely. The part of that too is, I know it's sort of a whole lot on this theme, is that we don't often say, and I know I totally been guilty of that, particularly in that role I was in, because it's just easier not to say it or not to do it, rather than confront the situation or deal with it. But stepping back is not always the answer, is it?
That's right. And I spent a lot of time, I've spent a lot of my career shying away from putting myself out there. And you can't run a business and do that. Like, you can't be shy. And I've had to learn to put myself out there, be uncomfortable, put myself in a lot of uncomfortable situations. But it can be, sometimes it's a bit embarrassing. Sometimes, you might be a bit silly or make, feel a bit silly, but it doesn't really matter. And the fact that, you know, networking is a great example. I really had, again, it was about the mindset. You know, I had a bit of a negative mindset around, I'm not a salesperson. I don't want to be salesy.
I teach every single day of the week, Angela, is for people who feel like that. Yeah, they feel like it's being salesy.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with sales. It's got nothing to do with sales.
So yeah. And I learned that sort of progressively. I should have engaged you, like, you know, 2 years ago. But I learned that it was all about connection and just, you know, sharing stories and being generous. That mindset's so important. That kind of attitude is not as critical when you're in a corporate role, because, you know, your business is, your income is not dependent on, you know, your connections. Although I know I regret not doing as much of that as I should have while I was in the corporate role, because it would have been really helpful once I'd left it to have those connections. But I've had to work hard, you know, on that over many years, because, you know, I make connections 2 years, make a connection, you know, 2 years prior for work, you know, that I get engaged to do tomorrow, you know. So it's a long game. But that mindset is so important. And when you're in that sort of loop of, you know, negative thinking, you know, it's a good time to challenge yourself. And, well, how could I actually think about this differently? How could I approach it? When I realized that I can approach it with generosity, it was like a light bulb went off in my head. It's like, oh, okay, because that's me. Like, I like helping people, right? I like helping people with their people, essentially. And so when I realized it can just be about that and not about being pushy or not about, you know, someone thinking that I want something out of them, it became so much easier.
Yes, it's what I, you know, usually say, if you're thinking like that, it's about your ego. Because if you're in a role and you've got an idea or a product or a service that's going to help people make their life easier, change their lives, then it's really just your ego getting in the way of sharing that information.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
Why would you want someone to not know about you, go to someone else that doesn't help them anywhere near as much?
Suffer unnecessarily, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I know I've got somebody that's starting the branding program, and she has been let down by two companies that just did not deliver on what they had promised at all. And that becomes very costly to people. That's why I always say, just book an appointment with me. If I can't help, I've got so many people that can, I will. They're not just a random referral. They're people I know, and I know you get the value out of it. Because it's such a disappointing space when people particularly are stepping in their own business. It's quite, you need to get those extra skills. If you're not skilled in speaking, then you need to get those skills. If you're not skilled in sales or HR or whatever it is, you need to employ people, or you need to learn yourself. When you're working by yourself, you've got to take on all those roles. So while you're doing really do need to get expert advice on how to do
100%
it. But to get the right advice with the right people, it's just, I heard two stories this week, and I just, it's really distressing where they've invested a lot of money that they really don't have and just not going to get what they were expecting. So it's...
Yeah, finding a good coach is really important, I think. I worked with someone last year, and she was able to kind of shift me from that. Was a lot of the contracts that I was doing were more subcontracting, and I wanted to get into that direct contract space. And part of that was she helped me shift that mindset. And it is a different way to think. I mean, it's different going from, you know, corporate environment to being a contractor, but totally different again from being a contractor to being, you know, CEO and running your own business and seeking out direct contracts. And, you know, because it's all about you, it's all about the brand, your brand, not somebody else's brand. So again, I felt like I needed that little boost, and that's, you know, it served me well. But, you know, when you feel like you're not skilled at something, then get skilled at it.
Mm.
Read, lots of reading, lots of listening to podcasts, and getting the expertise to help you, you know, from a coaching perspective, I think you're definitely really valuable, because you could be, you know, floundering in something for 6 months and really think of all the lost opportunities in a period of 6 months when you could have got great advice within a few weeks and really, you know, changing things around for yourself.
And what one of the things, if we're talking about mindset too, one of the things I find with women compared to men, and it's interesting because I market to women. I have the We Are Women podcast. I have We Are Women Mastermind group. I won a major international coaching award for coaching women. And out of my private clients at the moment, 80% are men.
Yeah. It's
really interesting space. But
why do you think that is?
Because men will go, I need to fix this, and they will invest in themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is where I'm seeing the big difference. Whereas women have to ask permission or feel like they have to ask permission, or could this money be going somewhere else into, you know, family resources? As opposed to, as you just said, the difference it might make in 6 months that, you know, you don't know what you're stepping into by investing in yourself. But yeah, that's the main difference. I find that all the time. Men with small businesses where I go into as well. It's the same deal.
Women don't put themselves first, traditionally, you know, and when it comes to running a business, it's, you do need to put, I mean, if you're leading your organization, your skills are the most important, you know, skills and capabilities are the most important in the business that you're running. Mm. So if you haven't got the right skills and capabilities, then you need to, you know, work it out somehow and build them in. There's lots of different ways to do that, but having a coach is one great way.
And lots of people I, you know, found over the years often get promoted into roles that they don't have the skills for.
Yeah.
They might be the top leading salesperson, and then they get promoted into the sales manager's role, which is a totally different position and expectations and outcomes. And that doesn't suit them, and they flounder, and then they leave, which is things I have seen before. I mean, how does a business really, because if someone's doing something well, you want to reward them with some form of not just financial reward, but something to recognize they're a senior.
Mm.
I know medical does it quite well in the hospital system, and also
universities
do it well also, because they'll still be practicing law or they'll still be doing the surgeries.
Mm.
But they just have a more responsible position.
Yeah.
Might be mentoring or something.
Yeah. So what you're talking about is kind of like you know, there's a leadership pipeline and then there's a technical pipeline, so that, you know, people can move up an organization or move into seniority, I guess, without having to lead a team.
Mm.
And organizations that do that well recognize or have in place, you know, structures that, you know, allow that to happen. You know, they can get the seniority without leading people. I mean, the other side of it is that it's not, if it is a different skill, but it is, you know, teachable and learnable too. So it's about setting, when you're putting someone who hasn't ever led a team into a leadership role, you know, support them, set them up for success. Hopefully, ideally, you would have given them some opportunities to try it out first. You would have maybe done some coaching or training with them in advance, or provided support in the early days of you know, a leadership career. There's lots of that first shift from being a team member to a team leader is a critical one, because it's, you know, you're, there's so many things to learn at that first step. And then there's kind of a step to more of a middle level manager, and then another step at that executive level. They're all different skills, stepping stones, but be mindful of the skills that you need and the gap that exists, and you know, from a personal perspective, seek it out. From an organizational perspective, support people in that journey. And it's okay if you know, we support you and it doesn't work out, that's okay too. You know, you've given it a go. It's not a failure if you decide that leadership's not for you.
I remember when I stepped, and so that, yeah, there's a difference between leadership and management as well, which we go into. But I remember when I first stepped into a leadership roles, the expectations of my colleagues, who I was in a similar role as them and then stepped up, it was really interesting, that change in dynamic.
It's really hard to be a colleague and then managing that same team. That's one of the toughest things when that happens. And I've seen a lot of it in my time. And it's almost like, you know, in some ways a bit of a grieving process for the leader, because they're having to let go of like close collegial friendships. I mean, it's a different, they're in a different role now, and they need to be behaving in different ways and doing different things. And so what they had before, you know, with that team is not going to exist anymore. It can't, because you're not going to be an effective leader by being a good mate to your old colleagues. So as I say, like, leadership can be very lonely. And put it, you know, you've got to create your own sort of network at that level, you know.
And that was very interesting when I stepped into it, because there wasn't anyone else at that level. It was only owners of the business, and then
you.
So yeah, and it was just the what worked for me, I think, was my capacity to fix problems, and their interaction with other departments within the business, because everyone within different departments has a different agenda and expectation.
And that's that role at next level up is about looking across the organization and smoothing the paths for your team to be effective. It's your primary role is to enable your team to be the best that they can be, and you've got that helicopter view, you've got that view above, and you're working with your peers, and you can see that high level issues and problems. We do something over here and it affects something over here. And that's the benefit of you being at that level. And you've also got the experience and the knowledge of, you know, the broader system. So there's a need and a benefit to that. But you do need to let go of what you used to do, which is hard.
It's certainly, I'm glad you said that it was the hardest thing, which is really interesting. And just on a different point as well, you mentioned the word grieving, which is when I left, and I don't know whether you experienced this when you left corporate and into your own business, after a few months, I just went into a funk for a couple of weeks, which is very unlike me. It's usually get up, get the work done and move on. And it was a funk is the word I used to describe it. I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I had a realization that it was grieving the company at work, the connections in that workplace.
Yeah, there's a comfort, there's a familiarity, you know, and going from, I think in particular, going from a corporate environment and then running your own business, which again is can be a lonely place. And so unless you're being very overt about it and being planned about, you know, connecting with people, it's all up to you. Nobody's going to come. Nobody's going to be ringing you and saying, "Hey, Angela, how's it going?" You know, in some ways, you know, and I saw it in the organizations that I worked for, worked with, there were a lot of redundancies over many years. And we had a little bit of a joke, like as soon as someone, you know, realized that you're exiting the business, they were kind of dead to you, right? It's just like, well, let's move on to the people that, you know, can help me get what I need to get done. Like you're no longer relevant. And it's not in a mean way. It's just, it's in a practical way. You know, you're not going to, my relationship with you is not going to help me get my job done anymore. And so that feels really funny. You know, it feels really funny to be, you know, cut off, you know, so quickly. And yeah, it's like any change, it's a grieving process. It's, you know, that what I had is no longer.
And it's quite normal, which is something
very normal.
People don't understand. Yeah.
And it's about then defining, well, what's important to me going forward? Like, you know, for relationships and your work colleague relationships are really important. And this is something I've actually gone through myself as well. You know, I've one of the main things that I missed in the first couple of years of my business is having a team. And so I've been able to slowly kind of, you know, develop, get into a position where I do have a small team now, and it's great. You know, I love working with people. I love collaborating, and I really miss that that part of being in a workplace.
And that's such an important factor. For me, it's mastermind and networking. Networking is a great space to build those connections and just feeling, because I'm an outgoing extrovert as well. So, you know, there's only a certain amount of hours that I'm going to sit in front of the computer at home.
Yeah, I'm not an extrovert, but I have moved down. I was probably an extreme introvert as a child, but and in my 20s, but I've, you know, moved down towards the extroverted and, you know, being a lot more comfortable with it and enjoying it actually. But I can only go so far, and then I need to have my own space and be back in front of the computer again.
My space is getting away and sitting in front of a campfire.
And
enjoying that, which I'm going to be doing this coming weekend, which is
awesome.
Love being
out in nature, such an important part of life and well-being as well.
Oh, definitely. When we finish up these, we look at three takeaway points. So we've covered so much, Angela, and it's been of such high value to listeners. What do you want people to remember?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that we've covered. We talked about perfection. So my little mantra is progress over perfection. So I'm not sure who coined that term, but
can own it. It's good.
It's perfect. Three words. That says, you know, look at the bigger picture, and look at that overall value rather than the minute. Minute stuff. The other one probably is that just putting yourself in uncomfortable situations and comfort, candor over comfort. So, you know, just putting yourself out there. If I spent a week and I've just not put myself that out there in any way, I need, you know, it's time to do something new, different. Reach out to somebody, catch up with somebody, do something that's a little more challenging. And probably the third thing is about that connection with others. Certainly running your own business is all about connection. It's all about, you know, connecting with people. And it's not, as we talked about before, it's not about me selling you something. It's about just me understanding businesses, what their challenges are, and helping them in some way. It might be connecting them to somebody else within my network that could help them, or connecting them to information. I'm a really big reader and researcher, and I love to, you know, share a little model here and there with people, say this might just get you over this hump that you're experiencing, or solve this little problem for you. So, and that, you know, it's not only great to have that philosophy as a business owner, but just personally feeling like you're putting something positive out in the world, serving some sort of purpose, even if it's small.
Yeah, they're all such important factors. Angela, how can businesses get in touch with you? Well, they're not actually businesses. How can people get in touch with you?
So we've got our website, www.eucalyptconsulting.com.au, or they can email me, angela@eucalyptconsulting.com.au. Often people say eucalyptus, and it's not eucalyptus, it's eucalypt.
How did the name come about?
I live backing up to Daisy Hill Forest and in amongst the eucalypt trees, and I was looking to have a link. It was so when I started the business, it was all about my own personal growth, but helping organizations grow and not just getting bigger, but growing their people and, you know, maturing. And so I wanted to have some sort of link to that. And I wanted the color green. That was because I'd worked in organizations that were very orange and red. So I was like, green is going to be my color. And now I got to pick some words that match all of that. So, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. No, it's lovely. Thank you so much for your...
That's all right. Thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah, that's just great knowledge, and time goes quickly, doesn't it?
It does. It certainly does.
And there's a whole lot of value on that, so thank you. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
And remember, you can contact Angela through eucalyptconsulting.com.au.
You got it.
I was so tempted to put the eucalyptus on.
No, I put the other in your mind.
You did. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. And remember, if you've got any questions, if you are looking for, you know, starting a business, or you're in business and you're looking for some more ideas, go to JeaneBosmer.com, book a strategy call. And as I say every time, if I can't help you, then I know a lot of people who I can refer to you to do exactly that. We look forward to you joining us next time on the We Are Women podcast. Bye-bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Jeaneen's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.